I love this camera. I was very impressed with how well it worked for Nice Guy Eddies. Because, like, it seems so loud. I mean, granted, we're kind of yelling at each other. But I really thought that podcast might not work. And it worked fine. This thing is a warhorse. Like, I love it.
Sorry, I don't have anything to add to that because I feel like I've heard you say that 7 bajillion times before.
But I really do. It's like, it's so old now. I got this camera, you know, like years ago. Well, 2 or 3. And it's like way behind the tech curve now. It should be a 3-chip camera. It's only a 1-chip. It's not HD like everything is these days. And I should get a new one. But even though it's outlived its usefulness as a camera, it's like such a good audio recorder. Like, people keep fighting with actual dedicated audio things. These other people doing shows and stuff, and sometimes it works, sometimes they don't, or like me with the Zoom. This thing's just fantastic.
Well, there is something to be said. Like in some cases, the older technology is definitely a lot more sturdier.
Yeah.
A lot more sturdier. A lot sturdier. And like, it's not so specialized. Like, the Zoom, it is so specialized. It's difficult to use. It's, like, finicky.
Right.
But this thing was just meant as, like, a more of a claw hammer than a chisel, you know?
Well, I think that's why people don't realize how good these little mics are on this thing, is because generally you're filming home movies where somebody's standing 10 feet away.
Yeah.
So the sound is shitty. It's very weird to talk right into it, because, like, even when I look back, see, that's how old this thing is. While I was on the cruise, the lens cap broke, so I can't even cover up my lens anymore. See how filthy it is? It's covered in grime now, which is another reason why I should get rid of this thing. So, yeah, like, whenever I see the video footage from this stuff, it's just my chin. So that's why nobody knows how good the mics are on DV cams, because you'd never film anything like that. It's too close to be usable. But it makes it so good.
But as a camera, it's kind of, there's absolutely no use for it. Like, you couldn't use that to film anything anymore. It's only, now it's just a really expensive mic.
Right. Well, no, I still do use it to film stuff. And nobody really notices, but it's just because I'm making little web videos and stuff.
That's true.
But I can't really think of the last time I recorded something with it. I kind of got tired of video and YouTube stuff. So what was I talking about?
Coffee.
Yeah, just that I was in Astoria, hanging out, waiting for you to show up, and had a coffee. And it was just, like, way too hot, like, you know, scalding my tongue hot. And then it's the perfect temperature for, man, I don't know, like 3 minutes?
Yeah, especially outside when it's cold.
Yeah, I was still inside at the time, but yeah, and then it gets lukewarmy, and then the best thing to do is, if you got ice at hand, just go for the iced coffee and go all out that way. I really think they should just give you a cup of ice with coffee, so you can just convert it. I don't know, so that was my big deep point, that coffee has a very short life cycle of perfect temperature. So let's play the coffee song by the Gandharvas.
I don't know that band.
Yeah, it's a Canadian band from London, Ontario. And they're popular here and there. They had some really good songs. But yeah, the song's just like this silly little ditty about, like, keep me awake, keep me awake, I'm still hiding from the day. You know, it's about coffee.
Yeah.
I never got addicted to coffee, really. At this point, I'm kind of worried because some days I do need a cup of coffee to get my day started.
Right.
And it never used to be like that. But I never got the whole, like, need coffee every day. I can't see it. It's just as bad of an addiction as anything else.
Well, that's one thing that I always wonder about is, like, I don't know, when I'm at home, it just doesn't matter, so I just don't drink coffee that much. And I think I really do mostly drink coffee because I have so much weird sleep patterns and hard time sleeping. It's more...
Isn't that kind of like a chicken and egg scenario? Like, you have a weird sleep pattern, so you drink coffee, which makes your sleep pattern weirder.
Maybe, but the weird sleep pattern came long before coffee, because I used to not like coffee either. But
what was your sleep pattern before coffee?
This is pretty much the same. It's mostly just that coffee just allows me to be more active when I am out of the house. It's like I'm going to be kind of tired either way.
So you always, like, didn't sleep till 4 in the morning?
Yeah.
Didn't sleep for more than a couple hours?
I remember when I was in elementary school still, that when people would talk about, like, what superpowers you want to have. I think I might have said this before on the show, but it's not like you can't hear it again. Internet. I didn't want silly fucking bullshit powers that were just like, I want to be invisible, I want to fly. You know, if you're invisible, people bump into you, it's not really that useful. If you're flying, someone's going to shoot you out of the sky, you know? Like, these are not practical powers. I wanted the ability to maintain a constant body temperature at all times, because I lived in the frigid north, so I could just walk around in a t-shirt, and that would be the best, and just not be cold. And that I could just set myself to sleep. Like, all right, sleep time, wake up in 8.5 hours. Ding, and just do it. And that was in elementary school.
That was in elementary school? That's so sad.
Yeah, I've always had bad time sleeping. Hard to get up in the morning. Hard to conform to a schedule. Definitely made school less fun for me, amongst other things. But what was the question? Coffee. Yeah. So
coffee just allows you to be a functional human being when you wouldn't.
Well, I guess that's the thing, is like, I've drank a lot of coffee in my time, but it seems like it's so much more severe with other people, like your boss. Would she have like 2 or 3 triple fucking lattes every day?
At least, yeah, at least.
And like Patrice, I think she quit. I don't know if she's still going cold turkey, but she definitely cut down a lot. She used to say that she drank like literally 7 or 8 coffee a day throughout her work day. And I have, like, on a crazy day, today I had 2 coffee. Whoa, that's insane. Usually it's, like, 1 coffee, and not every day. But then it's, like, I don't want to just act like I'm denying, you know.
Yeah, I only do cocaine once a week. I mean, there's people that do cocaine, like, 2 or 3 times a day, so it's not like I have a problem.
Exactly. Like, that just seems like such a cop-out. I don't want to be that guy.
No, but you're right. My boss definitely has a problem with the caffeine. I think it's also a control thing, though. She just likes sending people out to get her coffee.
Right.
She only drinks half of it.
Yeah, she likes spending $4 on a coffee.
$4.66.
Yeah, so it's $15 a day on coffee. Christ, that adds up.
On coffee.
I know.
We could buy an espresso machine. Probably, well, I guess we couldn't pay someone to do it, but...
Andy Rooney had a bit, like, 2 weeks ago, because Keith plays Andy Rooney's stuff just to mock him regularly. And it was like, how to save money because it's a recession. And did you know, in the CBS newsroom, it's $1.50 for a cup of coffee? I make my own coffee.
Would they charge you for your coffee in the newsroom?
Probably just Andy Rooney, because they hate his fucking guts.
Like, no, Andy, this coffee's not for you. You have to pay extra. Start, stop, and start. Stupid acting smart. Flirting with the flicks. You say it's just for kids. You'll be the victim of your own dirty tricks. You got yourself to tease and displease. Swinging wide, you walked into high. Looking at your feet, failure's complete. Saw you and me on the coin op TV. Frozen in fear every time we I should I be seeing nothing wrong.
But I think for me it was, I remember when I first started working at this coffee shop I worked at in Vancouver, I didn't like coffee. But it kind of, it was like kind of a boutique-y step up from Starbucks, fancy pants, everything was way too expensive. So we always had four types of coffee. There's the dark roast, the medium roast, and the light roast, which also alternated. We had four varieties of each. And then the fourth one was like the wild card, where it would be like French vanilla, or we had a chocolate coffee bean. It was weird. It was like the actual coffee bean was infused with chocolate flavor. It was kind of good. Bavarian Dutch chocolate, I think it was called. Anyway, it was my favorite was the French vanilla. And French vanilla coffee with a lot of milk and a lot of sugar is not like coffee at all.
No, and it's like a milkshake.
Right, and I got it for free, and that's what weaned me onto it, slowly but surely.
I had a similar experience. I never drank coffee until I started working at the last restaurant I worked before I gave up being a bartender. And we had incredible coffee. Like, I didn't even drink coffee at the time, and I knew this shit was awesome. And it was, like, known throughout the city. And we had, like, I had to learn how to be a barista. I had to learn how to make these coffee drinks, these lattes and mochaccinos and blah, 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 blah. And I'm such a... It's just in my nature. I can't throw things out.
Right.
If I make something, it has to go to use, especially food. And so I'd learned to make these drinks. It's like, well, somebody's got to do, I have to drink at least some of it. And I drink a little. And then it got to the point where I'd be like, whoa, I feel so much better. I understand now why people drink these coffees. You know, like I'd have two cappuccinos and I'd be like flying, like zooming, like, hey, you want to drink? And I'd get out of work and I'd be like, I'd like run home and jump in and say hi to people and on stores on the way home. And I'd just be like, zing. And, you know, that wore off eventually. But now my body's still like, hey, remember how good it felt when we were doing that coffee?
See, that even is kind of sad to me, because I mostly just, it levels me. It maintains, you know? It's not, I don't get that as much.
Oh, I turned into a crackhead.
Well, I remember I was doing that for a little while. It was around when I met you, around Keith's show in April. I decided...
Mr. Brown?
Yeah, instead of booze, because, I don't know, it turns out I'm not that bad of a drinker. I don't know, I can drink quite a lot and still be all right. I mean, I was just listening back to my Nice Guy Eddie show from yesterday, 2 days ago. There's definitely things I don't remember happening that if I hadn't have recorded it, I'd forget. But nothing important, just like, oh, yeah, right, we talked about the Bloodhound Gang, I forgot. But nothing too ridiculous, and I drank way more than everyone else. But, yeah, so I decided, though, for whatever reason, I was like, yeah, alcohol's not true. Well, I think a part of this was whenever April from Newfoundland would come visit, she'd bring us this iceberg vodka stuff from her neck of the woods. And then our house would be full of vodka. So I was getting to the point where I'd just go buy orange juice from the little store by our house and just start the day off with vodka and orange juice, like, all day.
Oh, God, that's such an alky thing to do.
Yeah, like, in our the YouTube video, when I did the little... When they brought up the Keith and the Girl towels, and I was their towel model, and Hemda just was like, hey, you want to be the towel model? And so I decided to take it a step further and was like, why don't we go outdoors, even though it was winter? Let's go outdoors and film me naked with the towel, like, laying on a bench or something. We ended up doing it in a gazebo. And I was like, that'd be way funnier. But if you watch the little video I took of the making of, it starts off with me putting down my glass, my screwdriver, because I liked the way the sound of it was, the ice tinkling in the glass. But that was very standard for that period of time. We just always had vodka in the house, so it's like,
so you start your day off with vodka and orange juice.
Yeah, it's like, I love orange juice, why not add vodka?
See, you're not allowed to tell me that I drink too much, that I have a drinking problem anymore. I have never started a day drinking since, like, you know, I was in college and had a football game to go to, and that was very rarely.
Right.
I've never started a day drinking. I mean, I've gone to brunch and started drinking, but that's usually around, like, noon.
Well, again, I think probably if you added up my entire day's worth of my consumption, it probably wasn't that much. It's just, yeah, it's just weird times of the day and, like, inappropriate.
You just wanted to feel like that all day.
I didn't even feel really drunk, but obviously it was doing something. It was doing enough that I was like, this is kind of silly. I gotta shake this. So that's when I decided I would try to be a coffee drunk. And I thought it would work for a little while, because if you have, like, 6 or 7 or 8 coffee, it's like drugs. It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I distinctly remember right around that time, it was Jason from New Hampshire was visiting, and Jeremy was here, and we were all at Sidewalk, and I was toe-to-toe with Hemda for the first time ever. We were just hitting it off like gangbusters, because we were both out of our minds, because she's naturally that way, and I had a lot of coffee. Yeah, we were just having a great old time. It was fucking fun as shit. Patrice was there, too. It was a good night. But then I would just stay up all night. You know, I just... I was like, if I'm going to do this, it's a fun evening, but then I'm not going to go to bed till late in the morning. So it just, and it started making me really twitchy, and my hands would be all weird and shaky and stuff. And on top of that, that is when I was drinking a lot of those Mr. Brown drinks, the, like, Chinese.
Had the melamine in them.
Yeah, which I later found out, fucking, because April remembered. She's like, hey, you remember that shit you were drinking when I was visiting? How, you know, me and you both were slamming the shit out of these fucking Mr. Browns, which are just these, like, Chinese cans of iced coffee that I got into in Vancouver that I love, where, like, a Starbucks double shot or whatever is like $2, and these things were like 60 cents, and now I know why they're 60 cents, because you can't trust China for anything. No. Particularly food.
No, food, baby products, toys.
Yeah, well, at least in this case it was just milk flakes, and the milk flakes may or may not have contained a certain amount of melamine. They couldn't even prove that it did, so it's not like those poor kids that are just sucking it down fucking hardcore.
And their baby formula.
Yeah, because that was essentially nothing but melamine milk. Yeah. Mine at worst was just a little, but it was fairly shocking. It was a CBC news report, you know, from Canada.
It's like, scary. Like, you can't trust, and when you can't trust the products, like, what do you turn to? Like, how do you function? Because all of it, everything that we consume is produced.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we grow our own food in any respect.
And that's like, yeah, those poor Chinese folk, like, what else are they going to do here? It's like, it was unusual for me to buy Chinese food just because I liked those specific things. But, yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to get a dead baby is what.
And then you're not allowed to sue, because you don't sue the Chinese government.
It might make your country look bad.
It will.
Job is done.
We will not be the losers. We won't leave till our job is done.
Yeah.
We will not be the losers. Sorry, but we're not the ones.
Yeah.
I'm prepared to go the distance and battle to the end. I will fight through the twilight to see my family again. But the desert is so cloudy. Hard to see. There's a chance, and that chance is me.
Although here, you know, I've looked into, like, the way the FDA and the USDA is supposed to regulate things like our meat and poultry, and, you know, food that can contain potentially harmful bacteria, and they just don't have the resources to do what people think that they do. They really don't. They don't test as much as you would think or hope for.
Did you ever see that movie, Fast Food Nation?
I read the book.
So I assume it's probably even more horrifying.
Yeah, the book had, the book was definitely... That's why I don't eat fast food, except for Chipotle. I love you.
I was going to say, I'm kind of worried to read it, because then I'll probably won't be able to eat fast food anymore, because Julio was telling me, nice guy Eddie's, that there's like a story about these industrial grinders that it's like cost them too much money to stop them and start them again, so they clean them while they're moving, and they tend to hire Mexican immigrants who have no paper trail in case someone happens to get an arm stuck in there or something.
Yeah, happens a lot. There's a lot of things in there like that.
Disgusting.
Yeah, and the cows that are sick. And, you know, can't even get it. Like, it was a struggle to get the cattle ranching conglomerates, whatever, to agree to not slaughter and use for human feed cows that were too sick to be led into the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
Like, cows that had to be dragged along the ground to go in. Like it was a huge fight battle for years to get them to say, downer cows, they're called, that no, you can't then feed these to people. They're fucking sick. There's something wrong with them.
And then isn't that how mad cow disease started? It's feeding cows to other cows,
mm-hmm.
and then it eats their brains.
Feeding animals to other animals, yeah, and all their brains and shit. Animals are not supposed to...
Yeah.
Ducks are not supposed to eat sheep. Sheep are not supposed to eat cows.
I was just going to bring up a defense of Canada about milk, but there's a lot of mad cow disease that came out of Canada, so this is not going to fly. But
there probably was coming out in America. We just don't test. We test like one cow out of every 3,000.
I guess it's more of a point of pride in Canada. We're like, really? Ugh. You know, here it's probably, it wouldn't be so shocking. But I'm just thinking of the milk example when I first heard about... yeah, like over using way too many antibiotics on animals.
And I'm sure they do that in Canada too.
Well, either we have an excellent milk board PR group or they don't, because I looked it up. I was concerned because I love milk and I was like, oh, I don't want pus in my milk. And all the research I could find online pointed toward it not being a Canadian problem.
The overuse of antibiotics.
Right, just because I think it's just because our need for milk is so much smaller because our population is just a teeny tiny little speck of yours, so we can get away with relaxing a little. And, I mean, Canada's just kind of more socialized in general, so I'm sure our milk boards and whatever boards are probably just more ironclad.
Well, there's also the fact that you breastfeed till you're 17, too. I mean, that probably cuts down on the need for milk, I'd say.
That hurts my feelings. It makes me want to...
suckle on a titty.
Yeah, it makes me want to hug my mom. But yeah, even if there was pus in milk, see, that's the worst thing, is that I don't think I'd stop drinking it. I love it. I mean, I probably, in the last year of living here, probably drank a pile of pus in my milk.
I don't drink milk anymore. I don't really like the flavor.
I love it. I love it so much.
Occasionally it's nice, like if I'm having a peanut butter sandwich or a cookie or something, then you need milk. But just to sit there and drink milk, wouldn't you rather drink water?
No. I love milk. I've always loved it. Maybe that's why I grew so tall.
Maybe. Maybe that's why you grew so big.
Did I tell you?
Milk done your body good.
Did I tell you that I had stretch marks on my back?
I've seen them.
Oh, I still have them?
Yes. I pointed them out to you before. I thought you were whipped. I thought somebody took the cane to you or something.
They used to be a lot more visible. They were like purple.
Really?
Yeah, just because I grew so fast, my skin could not keep up.
I had stretch marks on my ass.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, like across my hips, you can still kind of see it, like on the top. It's now, they're not really very visible, but across the sides of my hips and on the back of my hips.
You are fairly bootylicious. So did that all happen in 1 year? Like just suddenly, badonk.
Yeah, kind of.
Did it make that noise?
Yes. When it like bubbled out and like, badonk. Boing. And I had stretch marks around my boobs too, around my nipples. And I don't even have big boobs. And I mean, now they're you can't see them. But at the time, oh my God, I was humiliated. I rubbed rosehip oil into the stretch marks every night, crying, hoping to God that someone would take these stretch marks off me.
Wow, were they that obvious?
Well, you know, I don't even know, because everything looms large in your memory, you know? And when you're a 13-year-old girl, everything on your body is awful and weird, and you're the ugliest thing in the world. And ain't nobody ever gonna love you.
See, I guess that's kind of a nice side to being a non-metrosexual boy, is it's not like I was getting any play or going on any dates. Like, I was missing out on the benefits of being all handsomely, perfectly groomed and put together. But on the other hand, I didn't give a fuck. Like, it didn't concern me. So,
it's not like I was dating people at 13, but I wanted to.
Yeah, well, exactly. I guess that must be the problem, right? I was more than happy to just, I don't know, watch cartoons and play Sega.
Yeah. See, this is why I had to date older people. Because boys my age just wanted to watch cartoons and play Sega. I wanted somebody to play with me.
God bless. God bless those creepy older people.
Hey, they made me the freak I am today, baby. You should thank them, sincerely.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Well, I'm so lonely that I really wish that I could lay down and take a deep breath and die. But instead I cry myself to sleep and think as I do, as I kiss your sweet ass goodbye. When everything was going beautiful and nothing stood in my way, I had to go along now and throw that all away. And when the people tell me, Zaki, you better get your shit together, and I wonder if I will, I don't think that I'll ever.
Nah, nah, nah. Oh yeah, you're so bad. Cause Zaki, you're such a fucking bone, and kid, you get what you deserve and I'm glad. Now Zach is such a fucking bone and kid, you get what you deserve and I'm glad. Sometimes I really wanna pack a bag and get out of town, because I finally felt the feeling to be free. I want a big city life and a big city girl, and I'd like to take all of my friends with me. It's these big shot insecure people we have, who we give a right to hold a gun and a badge. Tell me what to do, I'm gonna tell you right back. So sick and fucking tired of always picking up your slack.
Na 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 na, oh yeah, you're so bad.
Cause I can suck your fucking bone and kid, you get what you deserve and I'm glad.
Na 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 na, oh yeah, you're so bad.
Cause I can suck your fucking bone and kid, you get what you deserve and I'm glad.
Don't tell me what to do, yeah, yeah. Don't tell me what to do, no, no. I'm gonna walk right over you, yeah. I'm gonna walk right over you.
lonely that I really wish that I could lay down and take a deep breath and die. But instead I cry myself to sleep and think as I do, Zach kiss your sweet ass goodbye. When everything was going beautiful and nothing stood in my way, I had to go along now and throw that all away. And when the people tell me, Zach kid, you better get your shit together, and I wonder if I will, don't think that I will ever. Zach, you're such a fucking bone, and kid, you get what you deserve, and I'm glad. Nah, 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 oh yeah, you're so bad. Now Zach, you're such a fucking bone, and kid, you get what you deserve, and I'm glad.
We just babble on, don't we?
Yeah, it's good though. Kills time. Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're waiting. We're gonna go see the wrestler. We have an hour and some time to kill.
Did you ever see Spun with Mickey Rourke?
Yes. I forgot he was in that.
Yeah.
There's aspects of that movie I liked. I don't think I'd watch it twice, but...
I don't know if I could watch it twice. It was like... I knew too many meth freaks. I mean, I liked the style of it, but it was intense and sad and awful.
That was the guy. Maybe I'll play that song. He did the video for Try, Try, Try from Sheena. The Smashing Pumpkins album.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think Billy Corgan did the soundtrack, or did a lot of songs for the Spun soundtrack, because he knew the guy
from their
previous work together. And it was fucking, that video was just another depression fest. It was like this dude and this chick. The chick was pregnant, drug addicts in Sweden, and they take turns. Yeah, just because the guy's a Swedish director, Jonas Ackerlund or something his name is. And so one day the girl would hook, and then the next day the guy would, and they swap back and forth, and it's just about their horrible spiraling decline. And there were two endings, and in the music video ending, they
clean up their act and they go take their show on the road?
They at least don't die. It's still not a very happy ending. But in the then there's like a 15-minute short film version where she dies. And, yeah.
Does the baby die inside her?
I'm sure it does, yes.
Who would fuck a pregnant whore?
I'm sure we could find out, I guess. It'll take a little bit of prep work. You'll have to get pregnant first. And then...
I'm sure there are those. I.
So now here's where the music nerd in me is like, should I play the album version, or should I play the alternate version from the Machina 2 bootleg series that's like hyper obscure?
Which one's better? I guess.
I don't remember. I'll have to check. So listen, maybe I'll play the alternate one just for the obscurity factor. Yeah, it was kind of cool where... Billy Corgan wanted Machina to be a double album like Melancholy was, but nobody bought Adore, so his record label wouldn't go for it. It turns out nobody bought Machina either, even less people. But so he had this whole second album's worth of stuff that was supposed to go with it, and then all these B-sides and outtakes and whatever. And so he pressed 25 record sets, where it was like a 4-LP set of like the main double, the second album, and then these three little albums of extra little leftover songs, and he just sent them out to people. Like there was like two or three high ranking members of the Smashing Pumpkins internet community that got copies, and he was just like, upload this shit, put it on the internet. So since there was only ever 25 copies ever, they cost a shit ton of money if you want to buy one. Like,
well, yeah,
$10,000 or something. It's crazy.
Why would you if it's on the internet now?
Yeah, well, if you're a crazy Smashing Pumpkins.
Smasher?
Archivist.
Please tell me they call themselves Smashers.
I don't think they do.
Oh, bummer. Or Smashkins. I'm a Smashkin.
But it's weird, too, just the choices. Like, it seems weird to me, like, when bands put out bad singles. And I remember I first heard that with Faith No More. They were talking about this one EP they had, and they didn't like the single the record label chose. They didn't like the cover of the album. And I was like, how do you guys not get to pick this stuff? Like, it's just their shitty record contract, just especially how it was back in the 80s when they started, that you just didn't have control over stuff. And that seems weird, too. Like, Billy Corgan wants to do a double album, and they say no. Who the fuck are they? He sold, like, 800,000 zillion copies of his old albums. Give him, throw him a fucking bone. But then I think it's weird, too, when bands don't seem to know what their good songs are. It's almost like they need to bring in an outside consultant or something, which is the other side of the argument, I guess. Because, like, so Billy Corgan's got his double album, and he's like, okay, they're only going to let me put out one half. he didn't pick the right songs. Like, he picked half good songs and half mediocre songs. Meanwhile, on the Machina 2, there's all kinds of great songs that nobody ever knows, that never got, you know, they're only for obscure internet nerds. It's like, why'd you do that, Billy? Didn't you know? Maybe he didn't, though. He's written, like, you know, 200 songs in his life. Maybe he just can't tell one from the other anymore.
Totally lost perspective.
Yeah. That's weird, too, about the history of Smashing Pumpkins. I hope you don't mind that I ramble about Smashing Pumpkins for hours.
I used to love the Smashing Pumpkins in eighth grade.
Nice. Oh, yeah, so you might know this, then, because you remember the podcast I did where it was just Billy Corgan talking about songs. I just put it together. Mm-hmm. Where he was talking about, they put out the first album, and what was that called? Gish. and toured around a bunch. And then he was having this huge writer's block. And the song that kind of busted him out of it was Today, because he was kind of at that point where it's like, either I got to just get over this or I'm going to fucking kill myself. And that song, it's like sort of this happy sounding song, but it's got all these lyrics if you really listen to them, like pink ribbon scars because he's been cutting himself, and his stomach hurts, his stomach stings because he took a bunch of pills, and all these things in there that no one really notices because today is the greatest day. And yeah, and that kind of broke the floodgates. And then after that, the man just wrote too many songs, if anything, because there's all kinds of outtakes from that album that ended up on Pisces Iscariot, and some of them are Gish stuff too. And then Melancholy was retarded. It was a double album already, and then there was like this series called The Aeroplane Flies High of outtakes and B-sides that are like at least another album, maybe an album and a half of extra songs. I still haven't dug through them because it's just too much. And then the same thing happened with Machina. He's just like, how do you write this many songs, man?
Well, won't things, like, change now? Now that, I mean, there's bands that are getting a, quote, record deal to produce one or two songs to put on iTunes. I've heard of this. It's kind of the way things are going now. If this is the way things are going, where nobody puts out albums anymore, and people just put their music on the internet, they sell it to iTunes, blah, 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 what is to stop a person like Billy Corgan from recording 700 songs and putting them all out there? You know, songs 300 through 472 right. sell, you know, 10,000 downloads, and the rest of them all average 20 to 30, but whatever. He's got 700 songs, and it's all out there. It's not like he ever has to decide, again, what the good song is, what the bad song is.
That's true. Let's let the market decide. Prince kind of did that. I was looking for the Nice Guys podcast. We played Bat Dance from the Batman soundtrack. So I was just looking for torrents, and I found this thing called Prince's iVault, and it's like hundreds of songs from like 1973 all the way up to 2008 or 2007 of just his outtakes and unused stuff. And for each year, there's like 12 songs of just all of this shit. So I guess at some point, he's just like, here you go. Or probably he meant for people to pay for it. So I dug through and I found like When Doves Scream, it's called. And it's just him doing a rocked out take in the studio of When Doves Cry, but all with guitar and him yelling and fucking, you and I engaged in some sex. And like, he's just throwing out all these lyrics like that.
That's funny.
Yeah, maybe I'll play that too.
I bartended with a girl who was like BFFs with Carmen Electra, like grew up with her.
Right.
And, you know, Carmen Electra was one of Prince's first projects.
Right.
Like, she was his lady. And this chick was, like, so trashy, this girl that I worked with, but she was hilarious because she'd be like, oh, yeah, Prince, he's got the smallest dick ever. We both fucked him, you know, it was fine, but it was so tiny, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that's awesome. I want to hear gossip about Prince. You know, I don't give a fuck about the new kids on the new Beverly Hills 90210. I want to hear about Prince's dick, because he claims to be a sexy motherfucker. I'm not so sure.
Well, maybe it's like, yeah, he's kind of, maybe since he's short and he has a small dick, maybe he's just really enthusiastic.
Well, and also she said, like, he was, like, controlling and weird, and we've all heard the stories, like, he forced her to sleep in her makeup. She was never allowed to not, you know, he would come over to her house and surprise her, make sure she was, you know, dressing appropriately.
Kevin Smith had a story in his first evening with Kevin Smith where, for whatever reason, it was like such a weird thing, but Prince saw like Clerks or something and loved it, so invited Kevin Smith into the compound to record a documentary. And it turned out to be because Prince had become a Jehovah's Witness for a while.
No, he still is. No, oh, he's yeah? still pretty religious.
So Kevin Smith hung around for a while, a couple of weeks, and filmed things, and it never went anywhere. It's just more stuff for Prince's vault. But yeah, apparently the whole thing was just fucking wacky and weird. It's just weird wonderland and doesn't make any sense in the real world.
Yeah, he, of all people, came up with, like, a video that was on the internet a couple months ago about how he thought gay marriage was wrong because he's all born again now and therefore everyone else should be. It's like, dude, you wrote Pussy Control. Fuck you.
Give me that beat again, man.
Picture that
So what were you saying too about like just bands putting out songs as opposed to albums? I thought that was interesting to note because it's probably true. Is Chuck Klosterman's review of Chinese Democracy? I reread it the other day, and that's one of the things he said. Like, this is probably the last album that will ever really be seriously scrutinized as an artifact, like as an what it
a
is.
Whole.
Yeah, like as something that comes in a case as a collection of songs.
Yeah,
that era is gone.
Best Buy's really pissed at Guns N' Roses, or rather, at, you know, the face man of Guns N' Roses, because it's they paid for exclusive rights to sell that CD and nobody's buying it.
Yeah, well, I heard the opposite. I heard that his camp is mad at their shitty promotion. Everybody's
really?
Mad at everybody. Yeah. But I gotta admit, I didn't buy it. It doesn't. It's like one of those things where I'm like, I was like, I love Guns N' Roses and I got
don't
nothing against
them?
Axl Rose. I just don't buy into it anymore. The whole idea that buying a CD matters. Like, even a better example is Evan Dando. Like, I like Guns N' Roses in a cheeseball way, but I really love Evan Dando. And he didn't put out an album since, it's been a while, like 6 years. And he finally put out a new one. And I was like, I should buy this. And I was at the CD store in my hometown. I held it in my hands. And I was like, this is $25. And I didn't buy it.
Well, that's obscene. That should not be like that.
Well, it's kind of an obscure album, you know?
Yeah, but even, like, you go to the Virgin Megastore here and get an obscure album, it might cost you $18. That kind of hurts, but usually it's $14.
Well, a similar thing where they re-released Lemonheads again. I saw it there. They had Shame About Ray, one of my classic albums from my youth. It was like a new double disc version with outtakes and demos and a little DVD and all those kinds of shit that it was like made for me. Why else would they put this out? But I just couldn't justify buying it, and I ended up finding a torrent. And when you look at the economics of it, it just doesn't, I just don't feel that bad about it, because the amount that a band actually gets from me buying a CD, it's more the numbers are like kind of more important to be able to say they sold it, but the reality of how much money that gets to the artist is so small.
That's true. They only get like, what, 3 or 4 cents on the.
There's something.
For
something
every single
like that.
One. But, you know, if you're selling, they used to sell 800,000 CDs in the first weekend, you know, and that when they first released it. That still turns out to be 200,000. I don't know, where did they get all their money from then?
Well, I think it's just alternative revenue sources now, you know, touring, selling t-shirts, downloads. What was the other thing I was just thinking? It slipped my mind.
I wonder how iTunes really works, like how much they do contribute back.
Seems like it's going pretty well. I don't know, I just thought a good example, too, of how things are slowly shifting is in the last podcast, intern Mike wanted me to play the Stardust song, Music Sounds Better With You.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, like, he sent me an email, and he's like, I went to look for it on a torrent site, tried one torrent place, couldn't find it, so I just went to Amazon and bought it for $1. Fuck it, I love this song, why not? And I think maybe that's just how things will go, is it just gets a little harder and harder to steal things and just easier and easier to buy them. But that's the thing with the CD is I don't even want the CD. It's like even if I buy the CD,
then you're just going to put it on in a digital format anyway.
Yeah, like last CDs I bought were Lemonheads again. I finally had some PayPal money, so I ordered, it's this series of fan like cover albums of Lemonhead songs from this guy's in Australia that set it up. And the first two volumes are on CD, and then the third one is just a digital download. And now I've got these two CDs sitting in a box. I just saw them the other day. I was like, why do I even have those? Why weren't they all digital downloads? I don't care about the CD.
There's a crow flying down from over the hill. Crack pane on my windowsill. Each morning broke provides a girl. Forget my evening feeling. Dog, it seeps shit to my skin. Then I recall a spark that kept me sane. Can't talk to you, it's plain. Won't start to name my pain. Up again, I don't know why. You tug the corner of my eye. Moving up the neck.
the breeze, got the sun into the trees, where squirrels are holding acorns in their teeth.
Actually thinking of this last night, and I wanted to talk to you about it. Like, there is going to come a point where nothing, if it's not in a digital format, it basically won't exist to you and I.
Right.
You know, like, because I was thinking about that vampire movie I was talking about with My Life with Thrill Kill Cult. It's probably on tape or on film somewhere in some weird vault, but who the fuck would ever know? Who the fuck's going to take care of it? How would anyone ever find it? Like, you'd have to really dedicatedly search to find this stuff. And maybe that's where that sense of pride that these old obsessive collectors, maybe that's where it came from, that they really did have to dig through old vaults of weird things and spend a lot of hours looking for things. But the way we're going, things just aren't going to exist if they don't exist in digital format. And I'm sure we're going to lose a lot of stuff, but
I think it's safer, frankly. I think digital stuff, unless there's a massive collapse and we lose everything, because they always talk about like how old films weren't maintained, you know, and it's hard to find a print of an old movie that'll actually work.
That's definitely true, but at least it still existed. If, you know, like, he couldn't find the Stardust in a torrent, I mean, it existed to be bought, but what the public tastes are going to start dictating, you know, if like 99 out of 100 people want to download Britney Spears' album, and ain't nobody wants to download, you know, Coco Rosie's album. What if that just starts disappearing? People stop having it or offering it.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know. I just think there'll always be somebody. There's always collector types. There's always archivists.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not worried, because I'm sure that this argument dates back to, oh no, what if things aren't on a cuneiform wax tablet in the king's treasury? You know, it's. I know that things will progress. It's just odd to think there won't be hard copies of things.
But on the other hand, there's stuff like you always hear about back in, you know, the ancient days of like some, you know, asshole A took over asshole B's city and then
burned his library to the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Nowadays, like, you could try your hardest, you can't erase stuff. You know?
You can't erase those videos that got leaked on the internet.
Exactly. Like, once something is out there,
when someone wants to make your life hell,
like, even if you dedicated, you're the richest man in the richest king of all of Prussia, and you decided you want to get rid of every copy of, you know, maybe even a song that only ever existed digitally, you know, that has never been in any other format, I just don't think you could. It would be impossible.
What if there was a giant industrial accident that released an EMP pulse?
Right. Yeah, I wonder.
Heavier and bigger.
I don't know enough about how hard drives work and stuff, how that data storage works.
I know if you put a magnet on a hard drive, it clears it.
Yeah.
But then again, I've heard, as far as forensic computer people, you know, like the FBI searching your hard drive for kiddie porn or whatever, they can take a hard drive that's been shredded, basically, and still reconstruct and get the data off of it.
Wow.
I think it probably still holds true, even if you magnetize it, you know?
But I think that is why you would need, like, some sort of sillily supermassive mega collapse, like a nice ice age or something. Because storage is, like, worthless almost now. It's so easy to get. I mean, like, you could probably take every movie, every song, every book ever, ever, ever made and buy some terabyte drives and back it up 50 times. You
sure.
Know? Like me, I could do that if I really wanted to, you know?
Yeah, I know people who have terabyte external hard drives, and they're, you know, put their entire life's CD collection on it.
I really love how, oh man, just watching that in my own life. I mean, I started off with records, but you can't really record on a record, so that's no good. But so we'll start with tapes, cassette tapes. And, you know, you got, like, the 60-minute tape, and then the 90-minute tape. That was the bottom of the
fingers. No, you got to taste it. It's like buttered cocoa shot.
Wow, that's pretty strong.
Yeah.
And then from the tapes,
I'm just trying to think back to, like, then I was, you know, I'd buy CDs, and then my first big purchase ever of my whole life was a CD burner, and that was like $200. Whoa! And then I could burn CDs, so it could hold X number of MP3s, and I remember I had a huge stack of them. And then when I got a DVD burner, I reburned everything on a stack of DVDs that was like, you know, an eighth of the size. Yeah, like really small. And now at this point, even that seems silly and quaint. Now it's like, you were saying, like, oh man, I've only got an 8 gig iPhone Touch or iPod Touch, which I had the 16. Like, the 16! Wow.
Yeah, but I even get tired of my music on my 8 gig, you know?
Well, even, like, I am running out of space now, but, like, when I first moved here, Hemda bought a 500 gig drive just to hold Keith and the Girl stuff, and it's pretty much full at this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, buy another one, whatever.
Not like they're expensive.
Yeah.
I believe I can see the future. I repeat the same routine. I think I used to have a purpose. Then again, it might have been a dream. I think I used to have a voice. I really don't want them to come around on
I was just like trying to remember what of the stuff we talked about before, something sparked that I wanted to say and I couldn't remember what it was, and I just remembered. So before we go to the wrestler, let me bring it up. Is about what you were saying about if things aren't physical, if they don't have a physical home, or if their physical home is just on a hard drive and it's all can be switched and it's non-permanent and can, you know, the data surviving and art
and whatever.
Right. I always think it's weird that every time in science fiction films or whatever, whatever view of the future, there's always some giant cataclysmic event that happens.
That erases the whole of human history.
Yeah. Or even not in a fictional capacity, just people like take it kind of for granted when they mention like, you know, what is so-and-so going to say about our society now? What are all these, what are they going to think about all these golden arches everywhere? And, you know, how are archaeologists going to interpret our society? And that always seems weird to me, because to me that is just kind of taking it for granted that something is going to happen, some big divide, some big shift where everyone's going to forget what happened now. When it seems like we've got enough of a grip on things, we've got enough of an ability to keep records, that why should that happen? Why, even if it is 1,000 years from now, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000, shouldn't it all segue into this next society? Why is the society we're in now necessarily supposed to crumble to its knees? I just think that's strange that people view things that way.
Well, it's, I mean, historically, because civilizations have risen and fallen, you know, the Egyptians, nobody fucking knows, you know, how they did half their shit. You know, the Mayans went away, the Incans went away. You know, there's these civilizations that just disappeared, leaving behind these artifacts that we're left to guess at. And you're right, we are a far better documented society, but maybe that's just still a fear. I mean, people always thought that the world was going to come to an end.
Right.
People always like to imagine.
Well, I wonder, too, if, I mean, maybe all of those societies thought the same thing, you know, or like the Roman Empire will last for 1,000 years or whatever. Or was that the Third Reich? One of them. And it was never true.
I think the Roman Empire did last for more than 1,000 years. Oh, I think it lasted for like 1,500.
Well, maybe it was supposed to last forever then. I know it didn't last as long as I thought it would. And so maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just the same as them. Maybe it's just because I'm in this society. I'm like, how could we got it? We got our shit together. How can this possibly...
Well, it's like, you know, that convention in movies of like, you know, it is the old Greek people or the old Russian people. I'm like, people the world over will always remember the name of great Thelonious blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like somebody that you never heard of. And it's like, oh, how terribly ironic and existential that nobody knows your name. You know, like, people have always thought they'd live there. People always think the world is going to come to an end and we're all going to die in a fiery cataclysmic death. And they always think that they themselves will be immortal.
Yeah.
That's why we erect gravestones.
But I figure even if it is just my insulated view of my current society, I'm still banking on that we've gotten over the hill of destruction and renewal, that we've gotten to the point now where we should be able to just progress in a steady incline and be able to hold on to the artifacts of the past instead of losing everything and then having it rediscovered.
What about like the day after tomorrow scenario where it's like extreme cataclysmic climate change?
Right. Even that, I never actually saw that movie specifically, but
happens overnight, you know.
Right. But if that did happen, crazy ice age, last 10,000 years, even that, I just feel like our technology has come so far that, sure, almost everyone's going to die, but...
And a lot of things will be lost and buried.
Right. But it would still be easier, relatively speaking, for, like, a small group to have their underground bunker with their thermonuclear power or whatever and fucking nuclear, not nuclear, and make it than it would have been before, where before... Yeah, it's just it would all be gone.
Yeah, but think of the things that people don't consider important in day to day. You know, do you know how to fix an HVAC?
No.
Do you know how to like rewire a lawnmower? No, these things fall away. If you're living in a bunker underground for 10,000 years, or even if you're living in your the chick is so ridiculous. She was like pursing her lips and looking into the window over her shoulders to check herself out and like swishing her hips. And yeah, she's very pretty, but come on, Sugar Plum. That was just, I mean, wow. Okay, sorry.
Well, see, she probably won't be in the bunker.
No.
Neither will I, neither will you. It'll be, you know, the
you and I'll be in a passionate embrace.
The elite scientist woodsmen among us who have the best of all worlds. They'll make a go of it.
The, you know, the 10,000 people that moved to Mexico and survived by living on the equator, literally, you know, there's parts of our culture that's just going to disappear.
This is quite an introspective next tune. Very introspective. So I don't think any of you should dance around or try and have fun or anything like that. Just sit and think about what you're going to do the rest of your life. Just sit and think. Let's go like this. One, two,
elusive butterfly, got your strip to pass my door. My brother likes the Yankees, she says. Even once I scored, I said, well, written at 1-1 at 25 is 6-4. It's a luxury Willie Pink O'Connor Sanders, one or more. You ask so many questions, answers that I choose. If you're no paranoia, I just say existential blues. Demon keys of life have been chasing my soul, and my mind is transcendental. And I'm losing all control, and I am sinking into the quagmires. Illusions and throw my crowd. My name is T-Bone, as I hound dog at your home. You ask so many questions, answers that I choose. It's the thing of PBGBs, I just say the same truth.
Sailing.
What is illusion? What is true?
Sailing.
Over the existential blue. God bless America. Alto glory to they see always wins with the red, white, and existential blues. Hey, bob and a 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 bob and
a bob and a bob and a bob and a bob and
I was on a quest to dream the impossible dream. Walking out road with it. People all around me looked at me up and said, hey, mister, are you tall? I said, yes, I am, but who are you, weird little wonders? They looked at me with big red bloodshot eyes and said,
we are the Lollipop Kids, the Lollipop Kids, the Lollipop Kids. We are the Lollipop Kids. We
that. I said, hey. Weird little wonders, I was on a quest. Walking out, rolling, when I go listen to slow down, mister. In order to find the truth of life, one must see the wizard. I said, the wizard? Well, where's this wizard or wise one live? I say, see the big green glow in the dark house up on the hill? I said, yes, I see the big green glow in the dark house up on the hill. There's a big dark forest between me and the green glow in the dark house up on the hill. There's a little lady on a Hoover vacuum cleaner going,
I'll get you my pretty and your little dog Toto, too.
I don't even have a little dog Toto.
It's such predicaments, I'm as Fort John, walking down the road with David. See, you know, kids, I can handle the big green glow in the dark chasm on the hill. I can handle the dark forest. I can handle the little old lady, but this is a very strange road you're sending me down. I've seen yellow stripes in the middle of the road before, but kids, never quite that wide.
Tighten your shorts, pilgrim, and sing like they do.
We're off to see the winner, the winner was. Well, I get a little bit tired of walking down the road one day. Judah, Judah. Hey. I'd just like to take this opportunity to say how happy I am we're going to war in a few days. I just think it's a wonderful thing, and you know, if that's what my country wants to do, I guess I'll just go ahead and do it. Anyway.
I get a little bit tired of walking down that blinding yellow road. So I think I'll pull my tired body over. A little rest area, you know. Lo and behold, it's a little field over there. Pretty red flowers in it. Oh, those red flowers, they smell so good. Whoa! I just think I'll put my tired over body over here in this little field of...
Puppies! Puppies! Puppies!
Puppies! Strange dream. I'll tell you though, those little red flowers, they smell so good. Oh, they smell so good. They smell so fucking good. The old wizard just gonna have to wait, man. Cause I'm gonna pull over again here in this little field of
puppies!
Back when I was a kid, things were going swell. Till something happened. Blow everything to hell! One night my daddy stumbled in, all pale and weak. So the woman of the block just gave birth to a geek. You see, if you take a pencil, the one hole left, looks like a pipe cleaner. Mash with a hand.
With a head.
And a buggy whip body with a brain that leaks. You got yourself a grit-eating pencil neck geek. Pencil neck geek, gritty freak, scum sucking pea head with a lousy physique. He's a one man, no good, losing streak. Nothing but a pencil neck geek. Most any night, you know where I can be found. Yeah, stop it, suck geek's head into the ground. Justin, a green Eldorado 2, screeched to a halt. A short man with a big red nose, choking a bottle of Yukon Jack, strolled up to me. He said, hey, son, don't bother me, old man. Poppies. He said, table. And I said, wait. This man knows my name. He must be the wizard. Why have you come to haunt me? Oh, was it a wise one? I was on a quest. What can I ruin it?
We are the monkeys, Fighting out of the crowd. Puppies. I said, oh man, I've been through hell.
He said, wait, son, slow down, relax. Back here in Berkeley, California, bitch. I said, wizard, a wise one. I've come so far to find the truth of life. He said, well, son, to tell you the truth, but that's what I've come to find is the truth. He said, no, son, you got me all wrong. Let me see, how can I tell you this? I've been in this field of poppies a long time myself. And I've come to find that the only truth in life is right here in this bottle. I said, wizard? He said, no, son, truly. In fact, I'd rather have this bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy! Some girl with psychic power, she said, Timo, what's your sign? I'm blanking as her neon, I thought I'd blow her mind! She's reading Moby Dick by some fruitcake named Herman. She's chomping on an octopus, that's a boss that's really impressive. You ask so many questions. Not true, there's a bit of paranoia, I just existential food. Really feel my terror.
this is Wayne on EBTVs. This is Good Sweat Paranoia.
Thanks, really. See ya.
What did you end up with?
So we just went to see the wrestler, and now we're at a diner called Remedy. And Ian's talking to her mom. So to pass the time, I will record more podcasts. So the wrestler was pretty cool. Not a bad film. And surprisingly accurate. As a big wrestling nerd, I was pretty impressed with all the little details that all seemed pretty much on the level. But I don't know what song I could play that relates to that movie. I mean, I could go dig up some of my favorite wrestling themes from yesteryear, but it seems like that'd be kind of missing the point. I just thought of what I could play. This is Mental Health by Quiet Riot. This is one of the songs that's like his like entrance theme in The Wrestler. And it's also the song that gets played at the start of Crank, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. So let's play that song and rock the fuck out.